Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the announcement by Japanese authorities that the Fukushima nuclear disaster has released radiation to the maximum on the scale to level 7, the same as Chernobyl. Dr. Arjan Makajani, the president of the Institute for Energy and Environmental Research, joins us to assess the upgraded danger posed to Japan and its people. Then we'll examine the role of the African Union in their failed attempt to mediate an end to the fighting in Libya. The Deputy Director of the Center for Strategic and International Studies Africa Program, Richard Downey, joins us to discuss this and broader issues affecting the African continent. Then finally, we'll look into ties between Ivory Coast's recently deposed dictator Laurent Gbagbo and the Christian right. Justin Elliott, a reporter for Salon.com who broke this story, now featured in today's New York Times, joins us to assess the role of U.S. senators and right-wing media figures, among other Christian conservatives, in supporting reactionary regimes in Africa. Let's now turn to the fallout from the nuclear disaster in Japan. Joining me now is Dr. Arjan Makajani, who is the president of the Institute for Energy and Environmental Research. He holds a PhD in engineering, specializing in nuclear fusion from the University of California at Berkeley. He has spent the last decades working to promote an economy based on completely renewable energy. His books include Nuclear Wastelands, Mending the Ozone Hole, and, most recently, Carbon-Free and Nuclear-Free, a Roadmap for U.S. Energy Policy. Welcome to Background Briefing, Arjan Makajani.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me.
Clearly, the upgrading of this nuclear disaster to level 7 equal to Chernobyl is bad news. But of course, it's apparently taken a month for them to announce this information. So could there be worse news in the pipeline yet to be presented?
This problem with 3 reactors and 4 spent fuel pool is far from being under control. The emissions appear to be lower now than they have been in weeks past, but it's not at all clear that will continue. The potential for releases from the spent fuel pools and possibly the reactors is still significant, even though there have been huge releases so far. I think the Japanese Safety Agency, as well as the company, have been living in something of a fantasy world and classifying this as level 5 so far at the level of Three Mile Island, which had no detectable contamination of cesium and other similar radionuclides far away from the plant, whereas we've had global fallout from Fukushima for 3 weeks or more than 3 weeks, nearly from the beginning, and it has been detected in the monitoring stations throughout the world. I issued a press release 3 weeks ago, I think, saying that level 5 was a fantasy. So, and these are not, this is not a numerological exercise. It's how vigorously you're going to respond, how vigorously you're going to measure, how vigorously you're going to protect the public, not only in Japan, but also around the world. I mean, Japan's neighbors are rightly concerned at the conduct of the authorities in this matter, and I think they haven't done too well. I haven't been very critical in the past, but given the scale of the disaster and the tsunami and the earthquake, but it's very aggravating to watch them playing around with these numbers and pretending it was a level 5 for more than a month or a month.
And Dr. Arjan Makajani, you just mentioned the spent fuel pond in Reactor Building 4. Apparently, there is still concern over that. And if that were to go have criticality, that could release 250 tons of material that are sitting in that pond. So when you say it's not over, it's certainly not over if that's still a possibility.
Well, they've already had a hydrogen explosion there, so far as we can see. It's suspected anyway. They've probably had a fire there. They've had enough of an explosion that it has destroyed a good bit of the top of the reactor building, and that's why there's been so much radiation leaking from there. The amount of radioactivity in spent fuel pool number 4 is very much larger than the others, not only because there's more spent fuel, but because the whole reactor core from the reactor had been unloaded into the spent fuel pool because the reactor was down for maintenance. And so it has got short-lived radionuclides like iodine, which deposit on grass and get into the milk and so on. And besides accidental criticalities, this reactor pool number 4, so far as I can tell, you know, this is a fog of the nuclear crisis, so I have to put that caveat, is by far the worst spent fuel pool problem that has existed in nuclear power plant history, period. By itself, it should have been classified as something more than 5.
And, of course, yesterday there was yet another aftershock that shut down the cooling system at the plant for almost an hour. So, again, it seems that we don't really have a fix on how much the Japanese authorities are on top of this situation, Dr. Ajahn Makajani. There is, of course, this Amakadari concept in Japan, which we would refer to here in the United States as the revolving door, often in reference to the Pentagon, where generals retire and then go into the military-industrial complex. But it's quite common in Japan for this Amakadari revolving door of government bureaucrats going into business. And do you think that that's a factor in the paucity of information that both the Japanese government and TEPCO, Tokyo Power, have provided from day one?
I haven't researched the revolving door in Japan. You know, it's an open secret in Washington, not only in the Pentagon, but in a lot of other domains, including the nuclear domain. But it wouldn't surprise me, because the government and the regulators and the industry in Japan are far too cozy. They've allowed them to get away with too much. They've allowed them to build these reactors in the first place in a known extremely high earthquake and tsunami zone. The nuclear industry in Japan hasn't been paying attention, from what I can tell, to advances in seismic and tsunami science in terms of estimating what they can do and in terms of design and protection. So, you know, I think the performance overall, you know, I really empathize with the people over there and how much they're suffering, and they have, the government has been in a very difficult situation, but I have to say the nuclear authorities in the company and the safety agency have not helped by pretending that this is something akin to Three Mile Island. It's never been from day one.
Again, I'm speaking with Dr. Ajahn Makajani, who is the president of the Institute for Energy and Environmental Research. So a spokesman for Tokyo Electric Power Company, TEPCO, who run the Fukushima plant, suggested that this could even end up being worse than Chernobyl. But that in announcing the level 7 on the International Nuclear and Radiological Event Scale, the INES scale, now putting it on a par with Chernobyl. But I think it's worth noting here that the measurement that we're talking about represents becquerels, I guess, or terabecquerels. Yeah. And that's not necessarily the best measurement, as opposed to sieverts, right, that measure the medical impact of radiation, as opposed to the scale that they've just announced, which measures the level of radioactive decay. And, of course, that's, in the case of Chernobyl, it was 5.2 million terabecquerels were released. And now the highest announced in Japan is 630,000 terabecquerels.
I'm not sure I agree with how the safety agency is representing the releases. I think there are other estimates, and I'm going to review all those estimates in the coming days. I haven't had a chance to review the Japanese safety agency's numbers and compare them to all the others that are out there. But that said, the two are related. The sieverts, which is a radiation dose, and the radiation releases are related. Radiation releases are like cobra venom. You know, it doesn't hurt you till it gets into your body, and sieverts are after the cobra bites you and the amount that got into your body. And so you can't get cobra venom into your body if it doesn't exist or if it hasn't been released. And so it's the greater the releases, and of course the releases have to intersect with food, water, air, and people, and land, and so on. And there has been deposition of radioactivity that's been very, very substantial in the environments of Fukushima. And of course, to a much lesser extent, there has been global fallout in the Northern Hemisphere, which has been measured here and in Europe.
Given there was a fundamental difference, Chernobyl was actually a working reactor that was in a state of fission when they foolishly allowed it to get out of control. This one, obviously we know what caused it, the earthquake and the subsequent tsunami that knocked out the backup power, knocked out the primary power and then the backup power. But the idea that they're somehow on a par, I think perhaps what's being lost here is that as terrible as it was to the Chernobyl accident was to the Ukraine and the vast area that's still uninhabitable, there's a lot of territory in the Ukraine.
Yes, exactly.
There's not much territory in Japan.
Well, there's that, and Chernobyl was one reactor, and there were no spent fuel pools that blew up. Here we have got three reactors and four spent fuel pools that are in question. So the total source of long-lived radioactivity like cesium-137, which would affect habitability questions, is very, very large. And this accident is not over. Chernobyl, the fire was put out after 10 days, and the reactor was sort of at least partially entombed in a preliminary way. This accident and the cooling that has to go on, this will have to go on for months. The spent fuel pools in three of the four reactors are exposed to the environment. It's unclear how they are going to clear out those spent fuel pools because the infrastructure, like the cranes and the service floors and all of that, has sustained enormous damage from the hydrogen explosions. So the problem of cooling the reactors and pools will go on for quite a long time. And I don't think the radiation releases, at least from spent fuel pools, 1, 3, and 4, especially 4, which has so much radioactivity, is going to be solved anytime soon.
Well, you know, Dr. Arjun Makhijani, there were reports of neutron radiation which would indicate criticality.
Yes. Now, we did publish a paper by a scientist who was visiting here in California, in Monterey, Ferenc Dalnoki-Veresh, and I reviewed his paper before we published it, and he did some calculations trying to estimate whether spontaneous fission, which occurs even in a shutdown reactor, could have been the cause of a detection of chlorine-38, which is a very short-lived isotope. And he concluded, I believe correctly, that it was not, that it would take a chain reaction producing lots of neutrons, an accidental chain reaction, after the reactor was shut, to produce that. Now, we don't, you know, TEPCO's measurements have been questionable, and they have been putting out measurements and then saying they are mistaken, and it's a company that doesn't have an entirely honorable record of being forthcoming with the public or even its regulators. So we don't know whether we can trust all these measurements. But if the measurement is right, I think that Ferenc is right, that an accidental criticality or perhaps more than one has occurred for short periods of time. These things tend to pulse in and out, and so they need to make more complete measurements. There'd be no follow-up measurements. There'd be no public statement about Ferenc's paper, which has received widespread attention in Japan. But we have no official word that such a thing has happened or not happened, or confirmatory measurements, which are not that hard to make.
So why do you think they're having such difficulty in cooling the spent fuel rods? 250 tons of it, by the way, in the pool at reactor number 4.
Well, I think looking at the pictures and the videos of the spent fuel, well, you can't see the spent fuel pool exactly from the videos and the pictures, but it's very clear that there is a lot of damage on the service floors, and I can't imagine that the pipes and the pumps and the pools themselves have not sustained a significant amount of damage. The fuel rods have sustained a significant amount of damage in spent fuel pools 3 and 4, at least.
Well, they dumped seawater, didn't they, from helicopters?
Yes, and they had to dump seawater. I'm not sure that there isn't some of the spent fuel that's lying on the reactor building floor or even, and there have been reports from the United States that some of the spent fuel was blown out of the reactor building and was found some distance away. There was a person who was found dead reportedly outside within the evacuation zone, and their body was discovered to be pretty radioactive and was not taken away, and this is not at the reactor site. Now, this is all from news reports, and, you know, the news kind of goes in and out, and we don't have very consistent information about what is going on there. But I am not confident at all that, in fact, I do believe that we're not getting the full story, and I don't know if they're making the measurements that would ever enable us to have the full story.
Well, in the last few minutes, Dr. Arjun Makhachani, clearly I've spoken to a former senior official in the Department of Energy who said that publicly the nuclear industry is putting on a brave face, but privately people are basically saying this is the death knell. And I'm wondering, I'm also hearing reports now that, oh, now thorium reactors will save us all, that there's a whole... there's a benign nuclear reactor that uses its own fuel. So where do you think the debate stands?
This is grasping at straws. People have been trying to do thorium reactors for 50 years, and we don't have one yet. Thorium has its own advantages and disadvantages, but the core problem with nuclear is the same. You're producing fissile materials in the course of operation just to boil water. You are producing fission products that are very, very long-lived. You're going to have a waste management problem that's very severe. In fact, I think some thorium reactors might have waste management problems that are quite as complicated or more complicated. A very, very small thorium reactor at Oak Ridge presented a mountain of decommissioning problems I'm not sure that, actually, I don't know the current status of that yet. But I know that for three decades, they're still talking about decommissioning. And this was a tiny, tiny reactor whose decommissioning estimates went up to $130 million for a reactor that never even generated any electricity. It was just a small pilot.
Well, I did an interview with somebody who touted thorium reactors, and I'm not going to bother playing the interview for the public.
Yeah,
I've made a decision right now, here and now. Well, thank you for joining us.
You can play it. You know, I encourage you to play it. There's room for public debate, but I think there are kind of cults around these reactors, and they don't see any of the plus and minuses. They only see the pluses, and this is what has gotten us into trouble, saying too cheap to meter, and this is going to solve our energy problem forever. And what it is people just want to perpetuate these esoteric jobs and making fissile materials just to boil water. And I think they're so firmly planted in the middle of the 20th century, it's frightening.
Well, I thank you for talking with us today, Arjun Makhachani.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Arjun Makhachani, who holds a doctorate in nuclear energy and is president of the Institute for Energy and Environmental Research. His books include Nuclear Wastelands, Mending the Ozone Hole, and most recently, Carbon-Free and Nuclear-Free, a Roadmap for U.S. Energy Policy. We'll take a brief station break, and then we'll be back talking about the African Union's failed efforts in Libya.